BBC Three Counties Radio. I'm Nick Coffer. So Simon Shepherd is a prison psychologist and director of the Butler Trust, which is an organisation which hosts awards each year for prison staff. And following in the footsteps of the great prison reformer John Howard, who made a similar journey over 200 years ago, Simon has made it his desire and wish and will to visit every single prison in the country with a view to highlighting the positive work of staff. And he recognises that prisons face a multitude of challenges, but he also wants to shift the narrative a little to look at what actually works. And he's written a book called The Good Book of Prisons, and I caught up with him yesterday. First, with a view to finding out exactly how many prisons we have in the three counties.
So you've got five prisons in the three counties. You've got Bedford, which is a local Category B prison for remand prisoners. You've got Aylesbury, which is for younger offenders. The Mount, which is a Category C longer-term prison. Woodhill, which is a maximum security local prison, and Grendon, which is run on therapeutic community lines and very different from any other prison. That's for Category B prisoners.
When you look in your book, you've done these Google sort of satellite images of the prisons. It's quite interesting to see them from above because you see the different environments that these five prisons find themselves in. Some are very, very rural. Some, to people who don't know them, are incredibly urban.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every prison is different. Every prison feels different and looks different. But you're quite right. I mean, if you take Bedford, obviously that's in the centre of Bedford. Woodhill and the Mount have got a lot more green space around them, and that makes a big difference. Grendon, perhaps somewhere between the two, but out in the countryside, and that has an impact, quite a profound impact on both prisoners and staff. Actually, I found so jails which are sort of very closed in on themselves, where there's no, you know, not any real green space, can be particularly tough environments both to live in and work in. Whereas if people can see sky, you know, if staff can sit in grounds, maybe when they're having a sandwich at lunchtime, and see trees and grass, and these things actually have quite a profound impact, both for the kind of the living conditions for prisoners, but also the working conditions for officers. And that's really important. But at the same time, you know, if you're Bedford, there's a limit to what you can do about that. One or two prisons, however, have started to try to do things like, you know, put hanging baskets out and about and plants on the wings and the landings. And it's only little things, but it just changes the feel of a jail a little bit. Liverpool, for instance, have been doing that. I know it's out of area, but that's a really good example of a jail which has been trying to turn itself around, and a number of other jails are following suit.
Yeah. To those listening to this, I mean, statistically, what, 96, 97% of us have never been into a prison with good reason. I happen to have been in prisons because I used to do prison outreach when I was a Samaritan volunteer. But you've spent much of your working life in and out of prisons. You've written this book for being in and out of prisons. For anyone who's never walked through the door of a prison, talk me through that moment. What does a prison feel like?
Well, that's a really difficult question to answer because every prison feels different. But I suppose, you know, if you go into prison for the first time, even as a visitor, in fact, the very first time I ever went into a prison was as a visitor when I was a student. I went to visit a friend of a friend of mine who was serving a sentence. He was in Maidstone Jail, and I've always been interested in jails. So that's the very first experience I had, was as a visitor. And then after that, as a prison psychologist in my early 20s, which seems an impossibly long time ago, in 1989. And you know, it can be quite daunting, really. And if you imagine it's daunting as a visitor or as a member of staff, how much more daunting it must be as a prisoner to go inside for the very first time.
When you go in, do you get that sense of unease? Do you get that sense of loss of liberty? Do you get that sense of potential menace? Do you get that sense of mental dis-ease? Did you feel that when you go in?
No, I mean, I don't now, but I mean, I've been to every prison in the country and I've been doing this for a long time. And so I suppose I've just got really used to it now. So I don't feel that. Strangely, I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with me. I'm a psychologist, I should be able to diagnose myself, but I kind of rather like going into prisons. They're a strangely, not an addictive place, but
compelling.
Compelling is a much better word, thank you. Compelling place. There's a weird honesty to a prison, which you might find surprising, given who's kept behind the walls. But there's a sort of straight honesty, by which I mean sort of straightforwardness. You know where you are when you're in a prison. You know, if somebody's unhappy with you, whether it's a member of staff or a prisoner, they'll make sure you know. None of the sort of office politics, you know, snidey, Machiavellian politicking that goes on in a lot of work environments. It's not like that in a prison. It's very straightforward. There's a lot of humour too, weirdly, in a prison. I think that's because that's obviously how you cope. It's how prisoners cope. It's how staff cope with some of the things they have to deal with and some of the awful things that they sadly occasionally have to see.
And you mentioned that with the things that the staff have to see. Obviously, we in the media, we report the facts, and sometimes the facts can be very, very harrowing in some of our local prisons. We have high incidences of prisoners taking their lives. For you, as someone who is involved both with the prisoners and with those running the prisons, what are the impact of those incidents on the prison community as a whole?
Oh, it's awful. When somebody kills themselves, it kind of it rips your heart out. It really does, and it does for the jail, and it does for staff and prisoners. I remember when I was working in Wandsworth, we had two suicides in quite quick succession back in the 90s, and you know, I knew there was something wrong while I was still in the gate collecting my keys before I'd even gone into the prison proper. You could just feel something in the air. The prison was subdued and really quiet, and it really upset staff because, you know, whatever somebody has done, it is the job of people working in prisons to take care of the men and women in their charge. And when somebody dies, there's a sense of we've let them down. And, you know, however much people pretend, you know, oh, you know, they care. You know, people who work in prisons do care about prisoners. And I know sometimes the public doesn't see that, and, well, the public often doesn't see that, but that's the reality. But also for prisoners too, it's just, it's a tragedy when one of their number takes their lives. And, you know, staff work incredibly hard to try to prevent that. And I mean, I've heard some astonishing stories of, you know, one officer who, I think an hour and a half lying on top of a prisoner with the whole force of their body to try to staunch the blood from a really deep cut that the prisoner had made. Just for instance, people, you know, running into cells to cut people down and struggling to hold the, you know, one of them struggling to hold the body up to try to take the pressure off the neck. You know, this stuff, it matters. It really, really matters.
Obviously, the narrative is around how difficult it is for prison officers, morale being low. We hear all manner of stories, potential strikes, prison officers struggling with the work they do. And then also we hear stories of the conditions for prisoners. And what surprised me about your research is that you've kind of come at this from a completely different narrative, which is one where prison officers do support each other, where there are small communities where prison officers and prisoners help each other. And this is a whole level of interaction that I think will come as a big surprise to us outside who have a sense of what happens in their inside.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that everything's rosy in prisons or that they're easy places. And you know, undoubtedly, they are not. They've gone through a really, really tough time over the last few years as a result of staff cuts back in the sort of 2011-12-13 period, and also the advent of drugs like spice, the so-called synthetic cannabis, that's kind of really a scourge, has become a scourge in prison. So there are real difficulties, and undoubtedly and some dreadful things that happen, and staff and prisoners being assaulted at an unacceptably high rate. But yes, you're right. I mean, ultimately, what is, I think, surprising to people is the nature of the relationships between prisoners and staff. And that really matters too in a jail, because that's key to any chance of running a jail effectively and safely. Those relationships between prisoners and staff make a huge difference. You know, apart from anything else, if staff know their prisoners and have built relationships with those prisoners, it's much easier for them to anticipate problems. It's much easier to see if perhaps a particular prisoner is behaving oddly. You know, what's going on there? If you know that prisoner, and then you can see and start thinking, okay, well, I'm just going to have a word with them. Often how you actually save people from committing suicide or from kicking off, because you can pick up that there's something not quite right. So
Do you see instances of favourite members of staff and even, dare I say, favourite prisoners?
You definitely have favourite members of staff from a prisoner perspective. Yeah, I think you do. I don't know whether that's a healthy thing or not. I mean, at the Butler Trust, we run annual awards for prison and probation staff that Princess Anne presents every year. And some of those, the officers who win our awards, you know, they would probably be among the favourites because they're people who really stand out from the crowd as going the kind of really going the extra mile to try to make a difference. There are some people within in any job who are just particularly brilliant at what they do. You know, maybe particularly good at their jailcraft, for instance.
Jailcraft.
Jailcraft is the term that we use to describe the kind of skills that prison officers need to do their job well, because it's such a varied job, you know. And on the one hand, if there's a violent incident and the alarm bell sounds, prison officers obviously have to go straight away to there. As I was going to say, they run there. They're not supposed to run technically, but they do, to get to the incident as fast as they possibly can. And they have to put their bodies on the line if they need to. If somebody's tried to hang themselves, you know, then they've got to run in and try and cut the person down and save their lives. They might be doing that one moment, and the next minute they might be offering a shoulder to a prisoner who's perhaps been bereaved, or maybe they've just received a letter from their wife saying that they're leaving them, which is what we call a Dear John in prison. So,
right,
you know, they've got to do all of those different roles, and they have to be security minded, so they need to always be on the lookout for any kind of security issues. So that's what we call jailcraft, being able to kind of combine all those skills together.
What's clear as well, looking at your book and your report, is that many of the prisoners, in fact, indeed on our patch, are quite creative with what they bring in from the outside to help those on the inside. I've met the guys behind Redemption Roasters, who are the coffee roasting company in Aylesbury, yeah. And there are a number of projects like that which integrate prisoners in a way that will help ultimately their rehabilitation.
Yeah. And I mean, that's such an important thing. You know, often we sort of think about what's the purpose of prison? Is it for punishment? Is it for rehabilitation? Whatever. I'm not even sure those two things are inconsistent with one another. But certainly for sure, we've got these 82,500 people in prison at the moment. Surely to goodness, we need to do what we can while they're in away from society to try to prepare them for release, so that when they go back out again, they're at lower risk of offending. And outside agencies play a big role in that.
That said, when you look at some of the things that are put in place, I mean, you mentioned hanging baskets earlier on, but in your report you talk about having phones in cells for access to the outside world. You talk about all manner of things that perhaps some of my listeners will think are a bit of a soft touch.
Yeah, you know, I've obviously heard that on many occasions in the past. But what I'd say to that, you know, it's the typical holiday camp thing. People say, oh, I like holiday camps. Truth is, if anybody who tells you that prisons are like holiday camps have never been to a prison, they've probably never been to a holiday camp either, but they've certainly never been into a prison. I mean, you know, the reality of a prison, I mean, who'd go on their summer holidays to a hotel which you're not allowed to leave, and where you get locked in your room for most of the day, and your room's no wider than your outstretched arms, and you've got to share it with somebody you've never met before, and there's a toilet at the end of your bed. You know, if this is luxury, if this is a holiday camp, then, you know, I don't know where people go on their holidays. And you don't get people who've been to prison saying, you know, I don't mind if I go back again. Occasionally you hear people say that, but most of the time that is bravado. There may be a handful of people out in society who simply can't cope outside, who'd rather be in prison than be outside. But the idea that prisons need to be harder because somehow that'll stop people reoffending, or it'll frighten other people off from offending, just doesn't work. I've been to prisons all around the world, and some really scary, unpleasant jails around the world, and, you know, they still have crime in those countries. Just because they, you know, they treat people terribly doesn't mean that somehow they're going to have a lower offending rate. So, you know, I think that this, and, you know, for instance, the phones in cells, I mean, that's a really good one. I think people have the idea that phones in cells are what the Americans call cell phones. And in fact, when they announced they were going to roll out in cell phones, a number of the newspapers called them cell phones and then confused that and thought that meant mobile phones. You know, the idea is that they had the idea that prisoners are trolling around the jail on their mobiles talking to their mates. That's not how it happens. What you've got is an old-fashioned plastic phone plugged into the wall. They're allowed to phone only a limited range of numbers that have been pre-approved. Their calls are monitored, and they have to pay for their calls. And actually, they've paid quite a lot for their calls, a lot more than the rest of us have to pay for our calls on the out. You know, they can't just receive calls from outside. And the reason why phones make a difference, it's partly about prisoners and their families and maintaining relationships with families, which are important. If we want to reduce the risk of people reoffending when they get out, we want them to maintain their relationships with their families. You don't want to go out homeless and socially isolated. That's obviously a big risk for reoffending. It's also for the families themselves. You know, if you're a child and your dad's gone to prison, your dad might have done something wrong, but you haven't. And the opportunity perhaps for him to call you just before you go to bed, that helps to sort of normalise things a little bit for you. That's important too. But the other thing is about staff. And we have to remember staff in all of this. You know, prison officers do a really difficult job. And we need to do whatever we can to make that job as safe as we can. And one of the kind of potential areas for conflict in jails is around telephones. Because if you've just got phones on the landings and prisoners are only out for a short time, inevitably what happens is they've got to go back behind the doors again to lock up the jail before the phone queue has finished, before everybody's got to the phone. And as you can imagine, that creates all sorts of pressures and potential for conflict between prisoners and also between prisoners and staff. So staff in those jails that have in-cell phones routinely told me that that was a game changer for them in terms of safety for both prisoners and staff, as well as its impact on families.
Quite an interesting insight when you think about it. We talk about prisons a lot. What is it like to be in one? And certainly Simon Shepherd there, the Butler's Trust, had a clear insight into that, not least the five prisons that we have on our patch. If you want to go and look at his findings at our five local prisons, go to goodbookofprisons.com. That's goodbookofprisons.com. It'll give you all of the information. This is Nick Coffer. You're with BBC Three Counties Radio.